Hey Weeans, this is a special episode as I'll be chatting with Scottish comedian, writer and actor Eleanor Morton. I first discovered Eleanor from her videos of her character Craig on Twitter. So before we begin our chat, here's a wee taste.
Whiskey. Please note that is whiskey without an E. If it's got an E in it, that means it's Irish. And if it's called Scotch, that means it's American. And it means it's pish. We have been distilling whiskey here for hundreds of years because, as I'm sure you could tell when you arrived this morning, there's absolutely fuck all else to do round here. Our whisky is unique and noted for its peaty flavours, which is another way of saying it tastes like mud. As you can see, we store it here in these oak barrels, giving an extra oaky, woody taste to your muddy drink. I'll be honest with you, I'm not much of a whisky fan myself. I like a Tennent's on a hot day, and on a cold day, a slightly warmer Tennent's. And now the part of the tour I'm sure you've all anticipated. It's the sampling, so please take a wee glass, swill it round, give it a sniff, nod sagely like you know what you're talking about, pretend you like the taste, commit to buying a full-size bottle in the gift shop for £75. That bottle will then sit unopened in your house for the next 40 years because you paid £75 for it, so you're not drinking it. I can see there are some youngsters on the tour. Of course, they would not be allowed the samples. I will take those away. I don't like drinking the whiskey, but I will if I have to. Thank you for visiting the distillery today. If you want to buy any whiskey, there's some in the gift shop.
So, Eleanor, tell me, what is it that interested you about the World's End murders then?
I think a combination of it being a local... You know, the World's End pub, I don't know if you know it that well, but it's on the Mile, it's on the High Street in Edinburgh, and it's just right at the crossing between the Mile and St. Mary's Street. And it's called that because the wall, the Flodden Wall, which was like after the Battle of Flodden, Scotland got really hammered and they got very paranoid about getting invaded. So they built a wall around Edinburgh. And so it's called the World's End because the wall was there originally, and the idea was that was the end of the world because, you know, you didn't go beyond the wall. So it's a kind of Game of Thrones, I guess. So, yeah, so it's like a big landmark, and it's also very touristy, like people are always there. And I think, I can't remember exactly when I heard about it, but I just remember being, that was one of the first local cases I heard about, and being the weirdness of knowing that something happened where you live, you know, fairly like within living memory, and also that it was such a, you know, it's such a nice touristy bit of town. Well, nice, you know, it's busy and it's like full of people, and you just don't think of something like that happening there.
Yeah.
And then also it was back in the news 2007, I think, whenever his second trial was. Yeah.
No, the first one was 2007.
It was the first one.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was still at school. So I remember that being on the news because that was the High Court in Edinburgh, and that was on the news quite a lot. So it was all felt quite real. And then the third thing that is weirder now, but wasn't at the time, is that my parents now live quite near to where both the bodies were discovered.
Oh, right.
Yeah, in East Lothian. So it's weird because I think often I like true, well, you know, like true crime, I'm interested in true crime, but there's something weird about when it, something local, I think it changes your perspective.
And you would have been about their age as well, wouldn't you? So kind of, and you would have gone out down in Edinburgh as well.
Yeah, I mean, I never went on nights out because I went in uni, but I wasn't in Edinburgh for uni. But it was really hard. I feel like this was quite an Edinburgh thing. I don't know whereabouts you're from, but
Oban, West Coast.
Oh, okay, yeah, my friend Jamie's from Oban.
There's always somebody that knows Oban or has been to Oban. Oban. It's one of these places.
Small world. But in Edinburgh, it's really, well, it was anyway, like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it's really hard to get into pubs if you're underage. They were really strict on it. So
Really?
you couldn't go into a bar when you were like, what age? Because the girls were like 17 or something.
Yeah, I think it's 18. The legal drinking age is 18, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they were 17, and it
But they
was
were very,
commented that
yeah.
they got away with it and even got to order a couple of drinks.
That didn't happen by the time I was a teenager. That was just like impossible. You know, you couldn't even go in. If you didn't have your ID with you, you'd have to just go home for the night, even if you were overage, because you'd be like, then they'll not believe me. And even now I get ID'd and I'm like, yeah, in
Yeah.
Asda, and it's like it's sort of flattering, it's sort of frustrating.
Oh,
But
that stopped for me. I
yeah.
used to get that because I'm only little, so I used to get ID'd all the time,
Yeah.
but I've got old now, Eleanor. It doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, it's it really depends. Sometimes I feel flattered, and sometimes it's just very annoying because it's like I just want to buy. I'm so much older than they could possibly imagine, but yeah, they were so young, and it just blows my mind because when you're young and you look at people that happened to, you think of them as adults, and you don't realize that they were basically children, which is
Yeah.
a scary, just a, yeah, a really scary thing. Just like I think of Edinburgh, I think Edinburgh's got a really grisly past, but it feels very in the past, a lot of it. Like it's very old, like Burke and Hare and all that
Yes.
kind of stuff. Whereas this was the 70s, I think. So, and then the repercussions are still happening.
What do you mean they're still happening?
Well, I mean, I say like still, but I mean up until only a few years ago, because I think, has he passed away now? He's
Yeah,
passed away now,
he
hasn't he?
did. He's dead now. Eh?
Yeah. So, but you know, that wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't. It was 2019.
I imagine they still have families who, you know, are in Edinburgh or wherever, like around there. So that was kind of nuts. Yeah.
At least they got justice because the other ones,
Yeah.
the other victims never did.
Yeah. So Frances Barker, I don't know if I'd heard of before.
So that was over in Glasgow, and she was just out with her family. No, she was out having a drink in her family in her, I think it was her sister's house, and
Yeah.
she just was had a few drinks, quite happy, and we just got the taxi home. She got to outside her house, and then the
Yeah.
taxi pulled off to get another fare, and somebody got her there. That
Yeah.
Ross, they quickly identified it as being that Thomas Ross Young, but and her compact was found under the floorboards of his house. He'd always maintained up until he died in 2014 that he was innocent. And even his solicitors, after he died, carried on trying to establish that it was a miscarriage of justice.
Really?
But I don't know whether he maybe was involved and maybe Angus was as well.
It feels like there was a real kind of Wild West time
It does, doesn't
that,
it? It was bad.
yeah. And I do think part of me thinks of the West Coast as being a bit more,
Rough.
not even rough, but just like it's another world, you know, that's the other side of Scotland, and things like that didn't happen in Edinburgh. You
But then
know,
it
you're
did,
not,
but then it did, but they wouldn't even link the
yeah.
cases. They refused to, they just weren't linking it at
Yeah.
all. It's like, no, it's totally different. Couldn't be the same person.
Yeah, and you know, I think they didn't really start looking at Angus Sinclair until,
It's 2000, 2000,
yeah.
because they got somebody came forward with naming somebody else for the Mary Gallagher one, Mary Gallagher murder in 1978, and it wasn't that person, but when they got the DNA, it was his DNA. So it was 2001 he was convicted. So it was a long
Yeah.
time. They were just lucky
Yeah.
that he was already in prison, because what else could he have been doing if he hadn't been caught for that?
Well, yeah, exactly. And yeah, the if that person hadn't come forward, and you know, it's just, and there are still cases like that, obviously.
Yeah, but it just shows you never give up hope because somebody out there, you just never know where
Yeah.
it'll lead.
Yeah, and the advancements in technology mean people can get convicted, you know, they think they're safe, but then
Well, then the double jeopardy,
sorry.
he thought he was safe. He was laughing,
Yeah.
thinking, I've got away with it. And
Yeah, I had to so I'm still a bit hazy on that, because so this what happened with that was they tried him and then they found more evidence, is that right?
so the trial, it was a really bad trial because they'd initially been given
Yeah.
6 weeks. They could, 6 weeks to bring all the evidence forward. to, you know, to present the evidence. But then at the last minute, and that somebody in their infinite wisdom cut it down to 2 weeks. So then they had to scramble and say, so what we're going to present, what can we put forward?
Yeah.
And it had already been ruled out. The DNA that they had was so tenuous, they'd already ruled that out. I think it was when it was the DNA that was found on the knots that the tide was up with. So that was too tenuous. So they didn't even show that. They didn't present that. They didn't present anything about the different knots and one, how one was professional and the other one was just, you know, thrown together, showing that there was two people. So they just had nothing. It was really circumstantial. And the judge just it didn't even get to 2 weeks. It didn't get to the jury. He just threw it out saying there was no case to answer. And it was after that it went to the Parliament, in Scottish Parliament, were just up in arms about it. Everybody was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what led to it.
Yeah, so it was a big kind of, it was a big case really, like in Scottish law. And it is scary to think that double jeopardy thing exists at all, and that is because other people can get away with stuff in circumstances where, you know, whatever happens. But
England had abolished the double jeopardy law in 2005, so Scotland were lagging a wee bit behind, not reforming the law until 2011.
I think maybe in America it's still a thing. I could be wrong.
I hear about it all the time, the double jeopardy law.
Yeah.
But then what you said about the forensics as well, because that's how they managed to get the second trial for him in 2014 for the World's End murders, because it advanced and they could actually take the knots apart, you know, get open them inside, and that's where they found both DNA really, you know, a good solid, because the other one was only partial. So, and that was it. Got them.
Yeah, and it's kind of mind-blowing that they, you know, can go back to cases that are so old and do that. You know, the stuff where I got a bit obsessed recently with, not obsessed, but, you know, there was a new documentary about Bible John, and I was thinking, I don't know if it's new, but I hadn't seen it. It might still be on iPlayer. It was like a three-parter. I mean, they haven't found anything new there, but it was like, it's so tantalising, the idea that they could, or that there might be some piece of evidence somewhere that someone's lost or stored somewhere that could reveal, you know, all this stuff that we don't know. But I think the way I got into true crime was we used to do lots of, well, we still do, you know, like historic Scotland. We'd always go to castles and things on the weekend and do
love castles.
Culture. Yeah, yeah. And they always have, you know, the gift shops always got like books in it, like Scottish folklore and Scottish myths and legends. And I think once I'd bought all of those, the only one left was Scottish murders. And I was like,
oh, it's a last resort.
Yeah. I was like, well, you know, but then I was kind of fascinated. But I think there was something weird about, like, when it was in Scotland, even though England's not far away, something about it being in your country is slightly scarier, which is stupid because it's, you know, it's always happening everywhere.
It's where you're from, isn't it? It's different when it's where you're from. You can go these places, you think, oh, I know where that is. It's
and I mean, this is kind of sad, but at the moment I live in London, very close, basically right in the place where Sarah Everard disappeared.
You don't.
Last year. And I was in Scotland when it happened because we were still in lockdown, but it was really upsetting to see places on the news that I was very familiar with being, you know, with the police and the ponds being dragged, and just a lot of stuff that was, you know, you think of as very innocent and your day-to-day life, and suddenly, you know, something really awful's happened there, and someone's been through something really awful in a place that you're very familiar with is very jarring. Which is, again, funny because I'm very into, like, morbid history and things, but when something about it happening in the present is obviously more upsetting because people are still going through it, I guess.
It's too close to home sometimes, isn't it?
But I guess also the other thing about this case is we don't know what else, as like you've gone into, what else Angus something about Angus and Sinclair as a combination is hard to say. Angus
is,
Sinclair,
I've
we don't
struggled too.
know don't know what else he might have done. Which I don't know about you, but in a way I find it almost comforting to find out that one person was responsible for a lot of murders, because then it's like, oh good, it's just one crazy guy and not like 20 murderers, you know?
Which in this case it is frightening, because the thought it was either, well, Thomas Ross Young or Angus Sinclair working together, and then obviously his brother-in-law as well. So, and the thought he
Yeah,
possibly did other murders too, and oh, that's
because
scary.
it was, yeah, it was two of them, right, who were in court. It was him and his brother-in-law.
No, because
But,
he died in
oh.
1996. He's never been tried. He was already, they only found his DNA. Oh, because nobody, once he died, everything, the family destroyed everything of his, so there was no way to get in his DNA. They had to go to where he was a painter and decorator, and he'd done some work in a flat, and he put the coven up, so they had to go to the flat, take the coven down, and from that they got his DNA. I mean, it was
Ah, that's crazy.
amazing. They were
Yeah.
determined. But no,
Yeah,
he never has been tried.
I for some reason I thought they both were tried, but he got off. But so that means he was probably it was a double thing.
Yeah, oh no,
It
he's
wasn't.
definitely there. His
Yeah.
DNA was found in the bonds as well. He was there. But what else he did,
Yeah.
who knows? Because, well, they've lost a lot of the
Yeah.
evidence now, so had it.
Yeah. It just seems like such a different time for, not that long ago, but a totally different landscape in a way of, when girls would go out, young girls would go out, and there would be that trust there that is not necessarily there now, that everything's going to be okay, or that it's all a bit of fun. And I think it's obviously very sad, but yeah, I always think about it when I go past the pub, like, because I'm in that area a lot during the
Are you
fringe and things.
really?
Yeah, and I hardly ever go in because it's so busy, it's impossible to get a table. So
Does it still look the same? I'm just curious because I've seen pictures of what it looked like back then.
yeah, well, I don't know what it looked like then, but it has like a mural, it has kind of murals on the walls outside.
It's
And
quite small, isn't it? And has it still got steps
yeah,
down to one part of it as well?
I think so. So it's like on a corner, so it's quite compact, and like, it's one of those old tenement buildings, so it's not really built for loads of people, but it's very like person heavy. Yeah, so like it's always been dark blue,
It was
that
red, I think, when it was back in there, it was red.
oh okay
Yeah, so it looks nice now.
yeah
It's got flowers, hanging baskets and that up now. It looks lovely.
yeah yeah I mean I've been told, because obviously now it's a very touristy area, but I've been told by people who grew up then that the high street was quite dodgy for like in that era. Like, it's a bit like I'm finding out now living in London that a lot of places that I think are quite fancy and touristy were actually like super run down and dodgy during the 70s and 80s. So, I find that crazy because it's so expensive now.
And that's the same
I
up
think I
in the Where the World's End pub is as well. It used to be a bit more
Yeah,
rundown.
apparently I had a music teacher who grew up on the high street, and at first I said to him like, oh, you grew up on the Royal Mile, that's fancy. But he said, no, that wasn't fancy. Like, that was actually quite like a dodgy bit of town to be in. Because I think obviously Edinburgh was always quite touristy, but I think still it was a bit just during the 70s and stuff, that wasn't like a great time economically. And so, actually, you think of them being in quite a sort of upmarket bit of town, but maybe it was actually quite a dodgy place to be. Not that that was their fault or anything,
No,
but
no, yeah. They were just like every other teenager, I suppose, just out enjoying themselves. You just don't think. You don't think. I mean, I was the same when I was a teenager.
yeah, I was gonna say, were you always out and just, you look back.
Yes, I do. I look back. I mean, I was just out in open, and obviously open, you think it's quite safe. And yeah, but yeah, I wandered about the streets. I've been down in London, up in Aberdeen, just wandering about, and you
Yeah.
just don't think about it. You just have, you don't
Yeah.
have that fear. I think that's what it is, isn't it, when you're young?
Yeah, it's weird. I lived in Glasgow for uni, and I never felt scared. I would walk around loads at night because I had to get places and I never felt scared.
No.
I think part of that is like, yeah, like youthful confidence, but then also like people from London have often said like, oh, Glasgow, that's a bit scary. And I think that's funny because I think London's much scarier than Glasgow. Like,
I would have thought the same.
Yeah. Have you done any open cases or would you find that weird? Like,
I haven't really found any. There's one. Yeah. There was one where it was, there wasn't a murder. He was going to be murdering somebody, but he'd murdered a few other people beforehand. So it wasn't a murder. And then there was another one where he was just, it wasn't a big story. He was just a horrible little man. And I just don't know.
Yeah. You don't necessarily want to spotlight everything that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, I haven't really, I think it's opens okay. It's not had big murders that I could.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure. That's I think why it's weird when these things happen, especially in Edinburgh. Or my mum grew up on the south coast of England, and she said the first time she, when she lived in Edinburgh, that was the first time she'd lived in a city, and she couldn't believe that like there was murders happening and things because she was from like a seaside town. And I thought that was quite funny because Edinburgh is like not that violent as things go, so she must have been very sheltered.
I think I must have been as well then, because there was nothing like that.
Yeah. There was actually quite a few when I was growing up, and I don't know if that was because I was interested, I noticed it, or if it was just, but there was Jodie, what's
Jodie
her surname?
Jodie Jones. Interest in that one.
So that was nearby. Never really sure how I felt about that and whether or not it was him, but I haven't really looked at that. Mm-hmm. And then in England, there was the two wee girls. That was when I was their age, I think, so. That was very like, and by that point in time, you know, the 90s and the 2000s, stranger dangers are a bigger thing. So you're very kind of aware of these things. But also I was a very anxious child. So I was very like,
where are you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I mean, like very interested in this kind of thing, but equally very easily upset by it. So I would like, I would read ghost stories, but only in the daytime because I'd get too scared before bed.
I think I'm like that with ghost stories. It's not so much murder, strangely, but ghost stories, it's like, I can't, and then go to bed. No.
Yeah.
No.
Even now I'm a bit like that. And I actually found Edinburgh kind of, like, the old town quite creepy when I was a child, so.
Yes, there's these closest, though. It's the closest, because, I mean, I didn't live there, but I went on the tour, you know, down to the closest, and that is creepy. There are, like, so many steps down, down, down.
Yes. It is creepy, yeah. It is a weird, a unique layout, really. And we did a school project on it in primary school, and it was very morbid, and I think that scared but fascinated me. So that's why, yeah, the reason I picked up on that, on this story particularly, is because I had, even though my parents live out there now, I had a friend who lived in Haddington, which was where they found one of the girls, I think. And that was probably the first time I'd read about something where I knew where somewhere was, you know, that wasn't a big city or something. And it was so close to where I lived, so.
He did that, though, didn't he? He was always out in the middle of nowhere and.
It's very, I guess the scary thing about Scotland is there's so much space to be, to do, you know, yeah, to be by yourself and to do that kind of thing. There was another Edinburgh case that happened when I was a teenager, I think, about, you might remember this one, for the girl, the woman who was having an affair with a guy and he murdered her and they still don't know where he's buried her, which I find terrifying.
Was he working in the office with her, they worked together, was that that one?
I don't know if they were, something like that. I remember the office was on Thistle Street because I remember it was on the news and I was like, oh, I know where that is. And that he'd gone to her work and there was footage of him at her work. And then there was footage of him with his car driving away and they know he went to the Highlands, but they don't know where, and he won't tell. He still maintains that he didn't do it. So
that's my gran told me about that story. Yes, I know that.
Oh,
one.
Really?
Was it Suzanne?
Yeah.
Was it Suzanne Pitt? Really?
Pilner or something, yeah.
Something like that,
yeah. Yes, Suzanne, it was. And I think, I want to say a school friend lived near the guy or a school friend's brother knew his son or something like that. So it was very, that was another one that, you know, it's just, yeah, there's something weird about it when it's, you know, Edinburgh's so small anyway, that's not as if you don't know every bit of it.
My gran's got a theory about that one. She's decided, or she thinks that he was just playing a cat and mouse game with them by traveling, because he went all over the Highlands, didn't he? It was all over the
Yeah,
place.
he did, yeah.
Yeah, and she said, he's probably hid the body somewhere closer, and then he's just done this drive all the way around, so
Yeah.
you'll never know where it is, but he's done it. He's got rid of the body already. That's what her
Wow,
theory is. He's just playing with
that's the good theory. She sounds fun. Is she in Edinburgh?
No, she lives, well, I'm down in Durham just now living. So she lives down here with me, but she's from Skye. She's not long moved down
Oh.
from there because she's got a bit old and frail.
Yes.
So she's had to
Oh.
come down here too. But oh,
Yeah.
she's always telling me, I've got another one for you. I'm like, oh, okay.
I don't have my grandma's name, but my mum is very very thinks this is all very morbid, and she loves crime drama, but she doesn't like it in real life. It's quite funny. It's sort of like she'll watch it if it's fictional, but if it's true, it's tasteless, which I think is, I totally get what she means, but I think it's quite funny that people, you know, they find I somehow find it more. I somehow dislike crime drama more because it's something weird about thinking about someone deliberately made that up is almost weirder than than just it happening in real life. But
Some imagination, some of them, haven't they?
yeah, well, my sister's got a very she's also quite interested in this stuff. Her PhD is in dark tourism, so
Ooh, that's interesting.
that's.
That's a new one.
Yeah, so I don't know if you know the concept, but it basically means tourism that is revolves around negative human history. So that can be anything from like Jack the Ripper tours to the Holocaust. You know, it can be kind of anything that's kind of tourists going to a place where something horrible happened, basically. But yeah, she does a lot of research into kind of the true crime industry and the way you know, people will do, you know, maybe Burke and Hare tours in Edinburgh or that kind of thing. And so, yeah, we're both always talking about super morbid stuff, and our mum's always like, stop it.
I'm trying to eat my tea in peace.
I think she's, I don't think she understands where it comes from because she definitely didn't raise us to be like that.
You're just curious.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting, you know. It's
I know.
I can't say I'm interested for like, you know, it's probably a bit of rubbernecking, but it is I think it tells you a lot about society as well, so.
Yeah, I just like trying to get the victim story over more
Yeah.
because that's what I'm more
Exactly.
interested in. I'm sick. I don't want to hear anything about the serial
No.
killers and all that. They're not important.
And the way you can find out about people's situations through these stories, like, you know, why was society, you know, why didn't this crime get solved? Were people not that bothered, or whatever it is, the reason people didn't come forward?
In this case, I don't think it's that the police didn't bother. I think that they really, I mean, from what I've researched, I think that, you know, they did their best and they really did do a good
Yeah.
investigation. But the fact that the Edinburgh side managed to keep all the evidence and all the documents safe and secure and perfectly, you know, ready for to go when
Yeah.
necessary, but the Glasgow side lost it. I found that a bit, it's not really good
Well,
enough.
yeah, I don't know if you've come across this in other things, but I feel like this happens a lot, especially in America, because they've got different states. Police forces are often competing over cases instead of working together. And all that does is, you know, and actually the Jack the Ripper case was tainted by the fact that the Greater London Police and no, sorry, the City of London Police and the Metropolitan Police would refuse to cooperate with each other over it. So, you know, and that seems to happen all the time. It's like they're more interested in their rivalries than not. I'm not saying that happened here. I'm not saying it was like a West Side Story thing with the Glasgow Police and the Edinburgh Police and snapping their fingers and Maybe they meet up at what's it called? What's the name of that service station right between the two? Hill something?
Oh, I can't
Ah.
remember.
They meet on the bridge, you know.
I don't think it was. I think, but I know what you mean though. It's not a competition. It's just really pulling your resources is much better than
Yeah.
doing it individually. But no, I think they did
Yeah.
come to. They did try, but I just don't know
Yeah.
why it was lost.
Yeah, and I think someone said once, I can't remember who, but I kind of agree with this idea that true crime or these stories, like, yes, you see the worst in people, but you can also see the best in people because there will be people who are dedicated to solving stuff and choose to come forward and choose to do the right thing. And I think that's weirdly comforting in a way, hearing about those people, yeah.
No, definitely.
So,
Especially after such a long time. I'm actually in touch with George Murdoch's family. George was a taxi driver in Aberdeen who was murdered in 1983. Have you heard of that case?
No, I don't think I've heard of that one.
It's never been solved, and I'm in touch with the family and I covered his case. It's coming up for 39 years.
Oh, right.
They're still trying, they're still doing the appeals, they're still going, and it just takes one
Yeah.
person. I'm trying just to get it out there for them and
Yeah, that's
just
really good. I
encourage
mean, it's I don't think I've heard of that one. That's a scary idea.
It
But
was because he
yeah.
was just giving them a tech, just giving this person a lift, and it was such a gentle guy. Listening to hearing from them as well, he was just such a gentle man that if it was robbery
Yeah.
that was the motive, he would have given them the money. He wasn't, it
Yeah.
was just it's just really sad. No motive, no reason, and nobody.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You forget not just about the victims, but the families and how it does a ripple effect there, and that situation can affect everyone. I've been listening to a BBC podcast all about Fairy Meadow, which is a beach. A girl disappeared on a beach in Australia in the 60s, and she'd only just emigrated there. And it literally was a sort of like 5 minute window where, from her being supervised to her going missing, and her brother has been. It's really hard to hear how much he's, even though he was seven at the time, he was technically responsible for her because, you know, that's in the 70s, you would let children do that, and now he still feels like it's his fault that happened, and it's, you know, obviously not true, but he's hung on to that for 50 years because,
That's sad. That's awful.
yeah.
Poor soul.
So
It did do a
you
lot of
know you think,
damage, can't it, that?
yeah, incredible. And I really recommend, if you haven't seen it, there's a really good documentary about the Yorkshire Ripper. It's not the one that was on Netflix. It was on iPlayer a few years ago, and it might come back up. And I can't remember exactly what it was called, so that's not very helpful. But it might have been something like A Very English Murder or something. But I
Oh,
might be
that
wrong.
rings a bell. That kind of
I
something
mean,
about
there's
the.
another. Sh I think there's something else called that. So it's not.
All
It's a bit
right.
confusing.
Because
But hang on, I'm
it's
just
not
gonna.
about the Yorkshire Ripper. What's she talking about?
There was a similar. Yeah, A Very British Crime Story is what it's called. But the important thing is, it's by a female documentarian, and it really focused on the victims and their families as well, interviewing their families. And it kind of turns the story on its head a bit. And it kind of, you know, the narrative you always get told is that it was sex workers, but also that he deliberately targeted them because they were sex workers. And you kind of learn about how, first of all, they weren't all sex workers, but even if they had been, you know, it's all about hatred of women, as opposed to a hatred of sex workers, and they're just the ones who are vulnerable because they're out there anyway. But it's you know, it's pretty grim watch, obviously, but it really doesn't focus on him at all. It focuses on the women and how they were actually not, the survivors were not listened to, which was frustrating because also it meant that the case wasn't solved as quickly as it could have been.
That does sound interesting. I
yeah
am all about the victims and hearing their story.
yeah
Yeah.
Well, it's not currently available, but
All
I'll
right.
send you the link in case you can find it on another platform,
Yeah, I might
because
be able to find it on YouTube or something.
because it is good. And yeah, you sort of remember that these victims are, like, the survivors are still alive, and they're still, you know, they're in their 60s or whatever now, but they're not old or anything.
Yeah.
or and the children, and it is always nice when you remember it was a person and someone who had an impact on the people who loved them and were affected by it.
Yes. Okay, what about this? You know how Angus had a son, Gary? He had a son called Gary. He was only a young lad when Angus was put in 1982 into prison, convicted of the 6 charges. And then he went on to murder himself as well. What do you, have you got any thoughts on?
So what do you mean, like in terms of nurture versus nature kind of thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so what age was he when his dad was in prison?
10, it must have been.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, obviously, anything about his childhood, but I'm imagining if it wasn't, if he's growing up with his dad, that's probably not for the first 10 years.
I don't think his dad was about I think he, because he, he was always out in his camper van fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's like, obviously, maybe there's a genetic component there, but also I think if people grow up with violence or in similar circumstances, you know, if it was a tough upbringing anyway, and then the sort of adult figure who's meant to represent what you aspire to goes on to be like that, then it's sort of like, you know, obviously I'm not saying that that's inevitable, but it's not, it's almost like not surprising. I've heard of a couple of other cases where that's happened. And I think in those cases, it made sense that, because they've been brought up in an environment with that person, they were going to go on and mimic that in a way.
In a way, but I felt a little bit sorry for him. I mean,
yeah,
it was more of a, he said it was more of a self-defense. Yeah, he'd been drinking. It was in the army and he'd been drinking and he'd had a fight with a couple of other army fellow soldiers and he'd ran away and hid. And it just so happened that this poor man had just come across him while he was hiding and he just attacked him, and I mean he took his all his clothes off and left him there for 2 days and he died from his injuries,
but, god
yeah, so but it was just wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, I mean that's a different kind, I guess you could say, a different kind of killing in a way. It's not like I think it would be more scary in a way if he'd repeated his dad's patterns and he'd chosen similar victims and similar crimes, because whereas that what actually happened says to me, who is obviously a huge forensics expert and doctor of criminology, so you know, says to me that that's a man who was probably brought up to think of violence as the natural course of things and how you solve stuff or how you deal with stuff. It is, you do feel sorry though, because it is almost like someone's kind of doomed from the start in a way. They don't really have a chance to change anything. If, I mean, they can. I don't think, you know, it's not like you do have choices, but it's just so much harder when you're, when you start in that position, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Angus's wife Sarah and his son Gary, they never spoke to him again other than to try and convince him to admit to the World's End murders, but he wouldn't. He just wouldn't do that.
Yeah, it's a power thing, isn't it? When they don't admit stuff, but they do and they withhold evidence on purpose.
He apparently said to one of his inmate friends that the guy, he said to him, "Why won't you admit that you did the other ones? That you murdered the other girls?" And he said, "Well, why should I? What's in it for me?" So I thought,
right. That's the scientific term.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine if he's in prison for life anyway, why should he?
Yeah.
He's not going to, it's not like there's a death penalty to threaten him with, or, you know, not, his situation isn't going to change at all. And obviously if he's sociopathic or whatever it is, then there, you know, he's not going to care about other people getting the truth. And I think any of those people who do claim that they want to help, is, I think that's always disingenuous. Like, I'm just listening to a podcast about the Green River Killer in America, who had a big kill count and was very on the run for a long time. But, you know, he had this whole attitude of, he got off the death penalty by agreeing to help to, you know, to say where all the victims were. And but, you know, I think part of that was him enjoying getting to reveal these details and tell people what he didn't know, and then also kind of like talk about it in a scientific way, almost like he's a third party viewing himself and just giving himself a bit more agency in it, I think. Whereas, you know, that's what they want attention. So I think when they do tell the police, I think that's for attention, and when they don't, it's for power. And either way, it's completely self-serving. It's not, they don't have a mindset of someone who understands. No, otherwise, they wouldn't have done it.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
What do you think about, so you know how, so when Anna Kenny, she was out for a night out with her friend Wilma Sutherland, and they were in the Hurdy-Gurdy pub. Have you heard of the Hurdy-Gurdy?
No, what's that?
It's in Glasgow. I don't know where, but it's in Glasgow. I just like the name.
It is fun. I don't think so.
No, I hadn't either, but I like that. So she was there with a friend, and then obviously she went missing. They didn't find her for 21 months. But when Wilma went back to the Hurdy-Gurdy pub, after, you know, just she only went back a couple of times because she was, you know, it wasn't a nice memory. She happened to come across Gordon Hamilton, and they ended up getting married. What do you think that's about? If he was involved with the murder, could he have been involved with the murder? Was it just a coincidence that he was there? I'm just curious what you think of that. On his wedding, on the day of his wedding, he fell out with Angus, and everybody's thinking it's because Angus, you're getting too close. You know, this is not right, but.
This wedding was after the murders.
This wedding happened in December 1978. So, yes, it was after all the murders had happened. And Anna Kenny was found the following year in April. So, yeah.
Wait, so, sorry, and who married him?
So, Anna Kenny's friend, Wilma, who'd been out with her the night she went missing.
Oh,
came across Gordon, you know, just a coincidence, came across Gordon in the Hurdy-Gurdy pub. And then, you know, the marriage, and it's just, is that a coincidence? Because obviously he's never been convicted of that murder. And I just think, wow, that was awful.
I looked up at the pub, by the way. I don't think it's there anymore, but it was in, I know the bit of Glasgow it was in. It was in the, near the cathedral, like that old town. But,
why would he go? No, if he did murder your friend, but if he didn't murder a friend, how is that awful? That's not a coincidence, is it not? That they just happened to
me. I guess you could go down the conspiracy route of what if he was paranoid, she knew something, and, you know, if they're married, I believe she couldn't testify against him.
Yeah,
I could be wrong.
No, I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah. I know that nowadays you can't be forced to test. Oh, no, you can. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, yeah, but I'm sure at one point, because... that was the plot of Brighton Rock, so...
What's it?
But that, I mean, that's English law, but that would be one reason, maybe, but then also, yeah, I mean, that's very weird, like, and also for her, she must have at some point thought, hang on, is there a connection here?
Well, she didn't, because her friend hadn't been found at the point when they got married, but then he was there when she was found. He was giving her comfort. He went to the family, apparently went to Anna Kenny's family with Wilma, and been there to comfort the family. I just don't know. That's really sick if he was involved. But if he wasn't, what a coincidence.
Well, I have heard that people who kill like that like to, what's the word? Involve themselves in the drama of it, so, you know, like becoming close to victims or phoning in tip-offs or whatever, you know, they like to be part of, they like the attention of being in it. So I could almost imagine that maybe he enjoyed being, knowing that what he'd done, and then being comfortable at the same time, having this attention and looking like a great guy for supporting her. And
I suppose the fact that Anna hadn't been found for a long, well, for quite a while after that. So I suppose he's got her. I know something. Maybe I'm just looking into it too much, but it's just strange.
Yeah, really strange. I think, you know, I think if you're like a normal person, knowing awful stuff is really stressful. But I think when you're this kind of person, it doesn't bother you. You just, you know, obviously it doesn't bother you because you can keep doing it. So
Yeah.
we might find it really weird that you can go around with that kind of weight on you, but actually, I think they often don't really care.
No, they don't seem to. Well, he was, I don't know whether he did maybe care a wee bit more than Angus because he became an alcoholic. He was living on the streets. He died,
Yeah.
apparently he died of a heart attack, and somebody's reported that it was when he was having a pacemaker fitted, but I don't know if that's
Oh,
right, but
right. No, but he was, am I right? So he never got convicted for anything, is that right?
nothing. He died.
So they only realized that he could have done all this stuff after he, yeah, okay.
Yeah, just
Yeah.
came out in the trial. Well, yeah, after they started doing the tests on,
And the DNA, yeah.
yeah, because it was the DNA they found the DNA on Helen's coat, and it was his. It was a large one, and it took them a long time to find Angus's DNA because it was so small and it was hidden underneath
Oh.
it. So it just was advances again that finally they could see
Yeah.
this hidden one, and it was him. But
Wow.
for a long
That's
time, they didn't know
crazy.
who it was. So yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on miscarriages of justice? Just because I'm doing a whole month in July when I'm working with the Mojo, the Miscarriage of Justice
Oh,
organization.
right, cool.
So I'm working with them. So I just thought, what do you think about that? Do you have thoughts or is it?
I think it's great that those organizations exist because I do think there's been, if you look into the history of it, a lot of really scary cases of people being either crimes not being solved because there's just not that attention, or people being convicted for things that they didn't do is very scary. Not as scary as it might be in somewhere like America, where the consequences can be like life or death,
Yes,
but
yes.
not that it's not incredibly. There was a podcast on the BBC about a girl who was found in murdered in the 60s, Elsie Frost in Yorkshire, and the guy who they originally decided it was went to, was in jail for about a year before he was acquitted. But his son was saying on the podcast that every day for the rest of his life he would make a note of all his movements, where he was all the time, because he was so afraid of something like that happening again. And yeah, I can't think of any specific cases that come to mind right now in Britain. I'm sure I will, but I think it's it I, yeah I find it very heartening when you find out about people who are willing to put that time and energy into those kind of cases that are very old or people think aren't worth the time, because it does still affect, people are still hurting if they don't have answers.
I don't know if you listened to the Elaine Doyle episode that I did when John Docherty was convicted of her murder. The Miscarriage of Justice organisation are currently working with John as they think he suffered a miscarriage of justice.
Okay.
So I'm hoping to do an update in July about that.
And when did that happen?
Well, Elaine was murdered in 1986, but John Docherty didn't get convicted until 2014. But he's
Yeah.
been in prison a long, long time
Yeah.
and he's been fighting for so long and
Yeah, it's really scary to think that, it can just be luck or a number of random things that mean that you can end up in a situation like that.
yes, I know. It just could be anybody. You could just be going about your business and, I don't know, the wrong place, wrong time again. And
Yeah, which is why the DNA thing is really good. I mean, also, I guess you can also be, there's downsides to DNA, like I'm sure it has been used in the wrong way, but it feels a lot more certain than you read about things that have happened, crimes that happened 200 years ago, and you think, well, they'll never know if, you can never know if that really was the right call, which is quite
yeah, and they were
scary.
hanging people and all
Yeah,
sorts back then. You're
exactly.
like, oh,
Yeah.
America's a lot worse. They're
Yeah.
executing people, and it's just not right. Sometimes there's evidence to say that they didn't do it, and they
Yeah, I
potentially could
mean,
still be executed.
I find their whole system terrifying and fascinating. I think it's so unique and bizarre the way they treat their prisoners, the way they the death penalty, that everything about their justice system is very bizarre to me and scary, but also obviously so many interesting cases. The West Memphis Three, who were released on a technicality, luckily, that was a big miscarriage of justice, and that was a case of, you know, teenagers being goths, and therefore, I mean, that was the, you know, the Jodie Jones, that case.
Yeah.
I'm sure that
there's somebody working on that at the moment. It's not
really.
Yeah. There's an organisation working on that. It's a miscarriage of justice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I believe the whole point, I mean, he could have done it, but I believe the reason he was, you know, suspicious, obviously he was her boyfriend, but also he was a teenage goth, and that's, you know, that's apparently a scary thing. So he must have done it. And it's crazy how many situations are, yeah, they just completely come out of, like, this person looks a bit weird or whatever, so acts a bit weird, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I act really weird, so I don't want to think how people are going to do that.
So, tell me what you're up to now.
What am I doing just now? I am getting ready for the Fringe, even though it's months away, but I'll be at the Edinburgh Fringe this year, and 1240 Monkey Barrel. I haven't written the show yet, so we'll see come along and see what happens.
1240 Monkey Barrel, what is that? Is that a place? What's that?
Yeah, it's a comedy club. Yeah, Monkey Barrel. 1240 is the time it's on. Monkey Barrel is the venue. Yeah.
You just said that so seamlessly. I was like, what the hell?
I did, that's yeah. I'm used to rattling it off. I mean, there's loads of weird bars with weird names, so it wouldn't be totally weird. No, it's on Blair Street in Edinburgh, so it's going to be fun. And I've also got a radio show coming up, which I need to remember when it's going to be broadcast. I know when we're recording it, but that's not very useful, is it? But watch out for that on Radio 4. It's called The Rest of Us, and it's me, Mary Flanagan, and S. Sears, and we're talking about Britain, but not England, basically. So,
yay! Yeah. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, it's sort of about being British, but not English. So just lots of funny jokes about that, really. Thanks for letting me come on and talk about my fascination with all this stuff. When I saw you on Twitter the first time, I was like, my kind of podcast.
And I was just like, he's gonna come when you said, when can I come on? I thought you were just having a laugh. I was like,
I mean, yeah, I was, you never know when people will be like, sure, do it. But I was like, if there's any podcast out there that I would love to chat on for just about my weird fascination, it would be one called Scottish Murders. So it just feels really nice to have, it's true crime, but it's local. I like that.
Yeah. No, we've talked about quite a few Scottish murders, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to have to cover them all now. You're giving me extra work here.
It's all right. It's all good fodder.
Yes, it is. It is. And I love your videos on Twitter, Eleanor. They're amazing. I just think they're great.
Oh, thank you.
Do you call them skits? Is that what you call them nowadays? Or am I a bit out of it?
I guess you could, yeah. Sketches, skits. They're kind of their own, you know, video comedy. I don't know. It's kind of a new genre, I guess, that's popped up in the last few years. I started doing them just because I was bored during COVID. So it's been fun seeing what's been happening because of that.
It's brilliant. I love it. It's your facial expressions. It's just that. It's just, you could watch
Thank
it on
you.
Mute and it'd still be funny. Thanks so much for coming on, Eleanor. It's been an absolute
Thanks
pleasure.
For having me. Oh, thank you.
So that was my wee chat with Eleanor Morton. I hope you enjoyed it. Just to remind you that Eleanor will be at the Edinburgh Fringe this year at Monkey Barrel Comedy Club at 12:40 PM from the 1st to the 28th of August. You can also listen to Eleanor on The Rest of Us, which is available on BBC Sounds. You'll find all links in the show notes, as well as on our website, scottishmurders.com.
Scottish Murders is a production of Clurentorn.